This is Carol Bond returning with the Decatur Herald Review, dated May 19th, 2015. We'll begin this second half hour with the reading of the death notices and obituaries. James R. Beckett, 88, of Blue Mound, Illinois, passed away on Saturday, May 16th, in his home. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Thursday, May 21st, at Blue Mound United Methodist Church, Blue Mound, with visitation 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, May 20th, at the church. Burial will be in Hall Cemetery, Blue Mound. Britlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur, are assisting the family with arrangements. Memorials may be made to Blue Mound United Methodist Church. Helen Willoughby Ellison, 96, of Moquegua, died May 17, 2015, at Joliet Hospice. Funeral services will be 10:30 a.m. Thursday, May 21st, in Sites Funeral Home, Moquegua. Visitation will be 6 to 8 p.m. Wednesday, May 20th, also in Sites Funeral Home. Burial will be in Oddfellows Cemetery, Moquegua. Memorials may be made to American Heart Association or FAME Evangelical Church. Douglas Clark Eshelman, 67, died Monday, May 11th, at the University of Chicago Hospital following heart surgery. Graveside services will be held Thursday, May 21st at 1 p.m. at Fairlawn Cemetery in Decatur, with military rites conducted by the Macon County Honor Guard. Condolences may be left to the family in care of Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home. Dorothy Irene Girk, 102, of Decatur, went home to be with her Lord at 1:30 p.m. Sunday, May 17th, at Imboden Creek Living Center. Funeral services will be 11 a.m. Wednesday, May 20th, at Life Four Square Church, Decatur, with visitation 1 hour prior to services. Burial will be in Cerro Gordo Cemetery. Britlinger and Earl Funeral Homes, Decatur, are helping with arrangements. Memorials may be made to Life Four Square Church. Edna L. Lamb, 99, of Monticello, formerly of Bement, passed away at 11:10 a.m. on Friday, May 15th, at the Piatt County Nursing Home, Monticello, Illinois. Graveside services will be held at 2 p.m. on Wednesday, May 20th, at the Bement Township Cemetery, Bement, Illinois. Visitation will be held from 1 to 2 p.m. also on Wednesday at the Rue Hines Funeral Home, 348 North Piatt Street, Bement. Memorial contributions can be made to the Piatt County Nursing Home Foundation, Monticello. Dr. Robert E. Myers, 90, of Clinton, Illinois, passed away 1 a.m. Sunday, May 10th, at his family residence in Clinton. Memorial services will be 12 noon Friday, May 22nd, at the Clinton Presbyterian Church. Burial will follow at the Memorial Park Cemetery, Clinton. Visitation will be 10:30 a.m. to 12 noon Friday at the church. Memorials may be directed to Dr. John Warner Hospital Foundation or the Clinton Presbyterian Church. Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton, is responsible for arrangements. Betty J. Dixie Pauls, 90, of Mattoon, formerly of Decatur, passed away at 12:30 p.m. on Thursday, May 14th. A memorial mass will be held at 12 p.m. on Thursday, May 21st at St. Patrick Catholic Church, with visitation 1 hour prior to services at the church. Burial will be in Camp Butler National Cemetery. Dawson and Wyckoff North Chapel is assisting with arrangements. Memorial contributions may be directed to St. Teresa High School or Lincoln Land Home Care and Hospice. Janice D. Robertson Resch, 83, of Decatur, passed away Sunday, May 17th, in Decatur Memorial Hospital, with her family by her side. Services to celebrate Jan's life will be 2 p.m. Wednesday, May 20th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be for 1 hour prior to the services at the funeral home. Burial with flight home ceremony will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials are suggested to the Susan G. Komen Foundation. We turn now to a column by Leah Kadem called To Your Health. Her topic today is about food trends. Food trends are driven by consumer hopes and fears. Within the past few months, the airwaves have been filled with news that big companies are moving away from scary-sounding food chemicals and additives. Kraft is removing its trademark yellowish-orange dye from boxed macaroni and cheese. Panera announced that by 2016, artificial preservatives, colors, sweeteners, and flavors will no longer be on the menu. Chipotle decided that when it comes to their food, genetically modified ingredients don't make the cut. Many of the companies making these changes are doing so in the name of better health for their customers and being good to the environment. We all want those things, so I'm not arguing against that. But even if all of our food was made in the most environmentally sound manner with the highest quality ingredients, would it be enough to heal the world and our bodies? Here's the thing. Food trends are shaped by consumer demand. Consumer demand, in turn, is driven by our needs and wants, as well as hopes and fears. As wonderful as the internet can be, it allows information, truth and rumors alike, to spread like wildfire. When I get questions from readers, callers, and people I meet, they often stem from something they saw on Facebook or discovered through a Google search. In the past few years, this has had an undeniable effect on the food industry. Walk into any grocery store and pick up a box of fruit snacks. Chances are the front of the box will advertise all of the ingredients the fruit snacks don't have: gluten, artificial sweeteners, GMOs, cholesterol, trans fat, preservatives, and who knows what else. And why? Companies of all sorts are constantly jockeying for customers to gain new ones and maintain their regulars. They'll invest lots of time and money in rebranding, reformulating, and repackaging if their customers demand it and profits depend on it. They may even further contribute to misinformation, continuing the cycle. On their website, Chipotle says that we're likely to encounter GMOs just about everywhere, because it's estimated that more than 80% of the processed foods consumed in the U.S. contain genetically modified ingredients. If you're consuming food or beverages containing ingredients derived from corn or soy, which is just about all processed foods, you're likely to be eating GMOs. In this case, Chipotle may be going so far as to prey on consumer ignorance. In truth, the amount of GMOs found in most processed foods can't even be detected. Genetically modified DNA is destroyed with the high temperatures used during processing. As for syrups and oils coming from corn and soy, they are highly purified. After distillation, any genetically modified DNA and proteins are gone. The final product is chemically indistinguishable from ingredients made from non-GMO crops. Besides, is a sandwich piled high with grass-fed beef and hormone-free cheese slathered with artisan aioli really healthier? I'm much more concerned about excess fat, sodium, and calories than the all-naturalness. It's easy to go overboard when you think you're putting better ingredients in your body. The ingredients being removed from our foods have long safety records, are backed by scientific consensus, and are FDA approved. Further, they tend to be cheaper than their more natural alternatives. It may be a challenge for chain restaurants and food companies to make palatable changes to their items without raising prices. Ultimately, they may end up losing customers who can no longer afford their feel-good eats. As cynical as it may sound, there is a bottom line, even for the companies that make a show of their philanthropy. So be aware of advertising and marketing tactics that aim to make you feel better about parting with your money. In the end, you're still spending, and fruit snacks will always be fruit snacks. We'll turn now to a couple of articles about Mount Zion. Berkey, Mount Zion Junior High principal, is retiring after 21 years, and this was written by Rachel Rogers. During the past 21 years, Jerry Berkey has served as the 8-hour dad to thousands of students. After spending more than 2 decades as principal of Mount Zion Junior High School and developing a culture of family with the students, faculty, and staff, Berkey will retire on June 30th. Kids have been my passion in my life for a long time now, and walking away from making an impact on their lives will be tough for me, he said. Described as a role model and father figure, Berkey is as much of a counselor to students as a principal, said guidance counselor Julie Marquard, who has worked with Berkey for 14 years. There's a lot of kids who really need someone in their lives that they can depend on, that they can trust and come to when they need support, Berkey said. Berkey has instituted a number of school traditions during his tenure, including playing music throughout the halls in between classes. A bit like musical chairs, students know they need to get to their class before the music stops, and it gives them a small break in their day when they can dance and have a little fun, said Marquardt, who will replace Berkey as principal on July 1st. He has just done so many things to make this school unique, she said. He will be greatly missed by the whole district. During his first year on the job, Berkey also established the annual 8th grade class trip to Disney World, which about 2,000 students have participated in since the 1994-95 school year. Eighth grader Dana Kennedy has looked forward to the trip since arriving at the school and will travel to Florida with her classmates this summer. She said she will especially miss Berkey's support for school athletics and his presence at the games. He's really supportive for everything that goes on in the school, but he also lets us have some fun, Kennedy said. Berkey plans to keep busy during his retirement, with goals of taking a trip each month for the next year and spending time with his 1 month and 6 month old grandchildren, Creighton and Parker. An open house to celebrate Berkey's time at the school will take place from 3 to 5 p.m. Sunday, May 24th at the school cafetorium, 315 South Henderson Street, and all are welcome to attend. It's going to be hard to not think of him as my principal anymore, eighth grader Peter Brandon said. I'm going to miss his loud voice at assemblies. I can't forget that. Accompanying this article is a photograph of Principal Jerry Berkey, who receives a high five from student Jersey Young as music plays in the hallways after the final class of the day at Mount Zion Junior High School. Everyone in the photograph looks very happy. Rachel Rogers writes this from Mount Zion. Mount Zion Board considers water tower options. Findings from the first Mount Zion water system study in almost 30 years made one thing adamantly clear Monday. The current water tower has to go. With a maximum space of 100,000 gallons, the tower lacks the capacity to serve current and projected future water needs for the village, engineer Nick Wagner of MSA Professional Services told the Mount Zion Board of Trustees during its regular meeting. Right now, you are deficient holding 100,000 gallons, he said. Water storage tanks that provide fire protection in a community are required to house at least 1 day's average water use. The village uses between 300,000 and 400,000 gallons of water each day, and Wagner projected that 500,000 gallons of storage would be needed by 2035. Following a study approved by the board in December, Wagner presented two alternative recommendations for water system improvements. One option would be to build an elevated water tank with a capacity of holding 1 million gallons on the east side of the village. The other involves building a similar tower, only it would only hold 500,000 gallons, while also constructing an above-ground storage tank near the Baltimore Avenue meter and pump station that would hold 500,000 gallons. Both plans call for demolishing the nearly 60-year-old water tower. Either way, it's not really helping us, so this tank goes away no matter what, he said. Village Administrator Julie Miller said the village staff favors the option for the 1 million gallon tower, which is estimated to have a lower capital cost and lower annual cost to operate the pumps. The project is estimated at $3.7 million with $18,000 in annual costs. The alternative with the above-ground storage would be about $4.4 million with annual costs of $35,000. Miller said they do not anticipate having to raise water rates for the village to finance the project. Water pressure comes from the elevation of the water tower, so extra expense would occur from using more energy to pump water from the ground storage unit, Wagner said. The new water tower would have a height of 840 feet, the same as the two towers that feed water from the city of Decatur to Mount Zion. The current tower stands at 796 feet. Our pressure that we're getting is all from whatever Decatur is pushing to us, but it's pushing a long way. So we lose a lot of friction, a lot of pressure, he said. Having our tank at that higher elevation in town is going to apply more consistent pressure. The next step in the project will be for the board to vote on engineering design costs at a future date. We'll turn now to a column by Lori Borgman entitled, Departed Father Still Takes Part in Wedding. We tend to associate friends by the places we've lived, a shared season of life, or the similar ages of our children. And then there are friends we associate with music. One such friend was one of the musicians at church, a gregarious personality with a rich, powerful, deep voice. We knew him through the songs he composed for our worship services, many of which became part of the repertoire. Not long after he died, we sang one of his songs in church. His wife's straight posture and stoicism collapsed under the weight of grief, her shoulders shaking and her body racked with sobs. Time passed, and when the couple's four stair-step children were with her, and when we sang one of his songs, there would be stirring and whispering and excitement among them. More time passed. The kids entered high school and college, and still they recognized their dad's music, but without stirring and chatter. I heard our friend's deep, rich voice again recently at his son's wedding. He had recorded some books of the Bible on tape, which is how he came to have a part in the wedding. There he was, or at least seemed to be, reading from 1 John about loving one another. He'd been gone a dozen years, but it was as if he weren't gone at all, simply standing out of sight, speaking into a microphone, reading from the book he loved. It was startling to hear his voice, disconcerting even, but then the phrasing, the tones, the richness of his voice rekindled a wonderful warmth and familiarity. It was fitting that he was part of the service. He was passionate about his role as father and husband, seeing himself not only as provider, but as a teacher who could shape the minds and open doors to discovery. That passion reverberated through his voice as instruction to his son. No matter how much time lapses, we can hear a voice and instantly recognize the speaker. We hear personality in voices, confidence and enthusiasm, or worry and fear. We can hear mood and outlook, sleepiness or alertness, kindness or harshness, patience or contempt. Tone of voice is nuanced and telling in a way that email, tweets, and texts never can be. It's been years since my parents died, but I often pictured them once again at our kitchen table, talking. It wouldn't matter a bit what either of them said. It would be their voices, a certain confidence punctuated by a lilt that said life might get hard, but keep slugging because it isn't over. Strong and loving voices from the past are a comfort and a treasure, whether they're piped in at a wedding or only in our memories. We'll have a look now at the Decatur Tribune. And this is Paul Osborne's City Beat column. Headline is, Government Can't Be Trusted to Report on Itself. He says, there's a guest editorial elsewhere on this website entitled Local Government Units Trying to Become Less Accountable, Less Transparent to Taxpayers. It is written by Dennis D. Rossett, Executive Director of the Illinois Press Association, which represents more than 500 newspapers throughout Illinois, including the Decatur Tribune. De Rossett explains that in order to cut funds, some Illinois legislators are trying to remove legal notices from newspapers and let each government unit post their notices on government-operated websites. Whenever that has been tried, for the most part, less transparency has been the result, with some units of government forgetting to post some notices. This newspaper, the Herald and Review, along with about all newspapers in Illinois, not only print legal notices in our newspapers, but post them the same notices online for free so that anyone has free access to them. Obviously, we charge to print the public notices in our newspapers, and it's been that way for 200 years. But such costs represent a very small percentage of any government unit's budget. Turning over the posting of public notices to some 7,000 government units in Illinois with the bureaucratic tape and hiring involved will give taxpayers less transparency and, in some cases, no transparency. I'll let Dennis D. Rossett explain what is happening in his guest column, but the growing attempt to pass legislation so that government can post and police itself is a really bad idea and should be rejected by any member of the Illinois General Assembly if it comes to a vote. Government has an increasingly dismal record when it comes to self-reporting to taxpayers what it's doing. This has been Carol Bond with the May 19th issue of the Decatur Herald and Review, and also the May issue of the Decatur Tribune. It's been an enjoyable experience reading with you, and I look forward to reading with you again.